This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under the radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Zach Orchow.
Zach, there was a significant action in the Michigan Senate this week on legislation supporters say will encourage economic development. What happened?
Well, first, there's two words we haven't been able to say about the Michigan legislature since last November. Significant action. It was almost a surprise to actually see it. But yes, the Michigan Senate passed a whole series of bills essentially designed to augment the types of tax incentives and cash incentives the state uses to attract and retain businesses in Michigan. Michigan does not have a research and development tax credit. These bills would create one. These bills would also bring back but dramatically change a tax incentive program designed to encourage companies to hire employees by letting the employer keep their state income tax withholdings for those employees instead of remitting them to the state. And then the big subject that Democrats in Lansing lately have been talking about is community benefits. And one of the bills that passed would take half of a very large pot of money, $500 million, half of that, and put it toward almost anything that would qualify as a community benefit.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Governor Whitmer pitch the idea of the SOAR fund as a way to win big projects to the state, like the Ford electric vehicle plant in Marshall? I mean, how likely is she to support something like this?
Well, not likely at all, I don't think. You know, our listeners may remember we asked the governor about an earlier version of what the Senate passed that would have redirected 20% of funds toward community benefits. Now it's 50% from a much bigger pot of money. The governor wants that pot of money available solely as cash incentives to attract businesses and doesn't want it carved up. Here's what Governor Whitmer said about that 20% idea in January.
My goal is to make sure that we are able to outcompete other states and earn investment of incumbent businesses as they grow here and others, you know, we want them to call their home Michigan.
Well, we spoke to Quentin Messer, the leader of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, on Monday, and this was before the Senate unveiled and passed this proposal to redirect 50% of funds to communities. We asked him about the earlier 20% proposal, and this is what he said.
Ultimately, elected officials will deem what they perceive the best way of executing the Make It in Michigan economic development strategy focused on people, places, and projects. It is not my place to opine on whether or not I believe, you know, the efficacy of it. And I think the Make It in Michigan strategy allows for there to be support and help companies de-risk their investment, but also the place portion allows for there to be investment in the cultivation and revitalization of communities. And the people part allows us to make sure that we develop the most important asset that Michigan has, which are the people who live here in the state.
Zach, are there any indications about the MEDC's reaction to what the Senate passed?
Well, let's just say I don't think the folks at the MEDC are sorry to see the legislature leave town for the next 3 weeks. This was a big surprise to them at what happened, and it seems to set the stage for Democrats in the legislature saying, hey, look, Governor, if you want this research and development tax credit, if you want this tax credit for hiring employees, you got to play ball on the community benefits piece.
Well, it sounds like it's going to get juicy around here when they come back in 3 weeks.
It would be a nice change of pace in some ways. It's been very quiet so far this year.
Well, we will have our full discussion with Quentin Messer from the MEDC right after this break.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Zach Orchow. We're here now with Michigan Economic Development Corporation CEO Quentin Messer. Welcome to Mishmash.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Well, we're glad you're here. Could you start off first by telling us and the listeners what the Michigan Economic Development Corporation does and what your role as CEO is?
Sure. Thanks for the question. I think the best way to think about it really is MEDC is entrusted to execute the state's economic development strategy, which means how do we bring more jobs, more entrepreneurial opportunities, tell the Michigan story, have more tourists, have more people believing in what we're building in Michigan. So the Michigan Economic Development Strategy is Make It in Michigan. I know that you've talked to Speaker Tate and obviously to Governor Whitmer in the past, and they've probably talked about the Make It in Michigan strategy focused on people, places, and projects. We have to develop and attract people, cultivate and revitalize places, and then compete for and win projects. And we do that through teams ranging from small business to talent attraction. We have a marketing team, a Travel Michigan team that's responsible for the iconic Pure Michigan brand, as well as the Make It in Michigan brand, and the nation's first chief growth officer, Hillary Doe, is now MEDC's chief marketing officer, as well as the nation's first chief mobility officer, or that office in the Office of Future Mobility and Electrification is now led by Justine Johnson. So we try to make sure that Michigan remains at the cutting edge of delivering economic prosperity.
So in recent years, the state's primary job slash attraction or retention strategy was the Strategic Outreach and Attraction Reserve Fund, also known as SOAR. And the disbursement of hundreds of millions in money from the government or taxpayers to company was went that way. What is the state's primary job attraction strategy right now?
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would subtly suggest that SOAR actually was maybe the business attraction tool that attracted the most attention because of some of the large projects, and then its genesis. But we have always had a legislatively developed tool called the Michigan Business Development Program grant. That's kind of the worker bee opportunity. It's capped at $10 million. So SOAR came about because post the change in federal industrial policy with the Infrastructure Jobs and Training Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, the CHIPS Act, various very aggressive and welcome policies by the Biden-Harris administration to bring back supply chains and reduce reliance on others as we develop supply chains ranging in industries such as mobility, semiconductors, clean tech, and defense and aerospace. We required SOAR because the size of the projects got larger, but believe it or not, the number of SOAR projects pales in comparison to the almost 100 projects we have done annually that rely on the Michigan Business Development Program grant or ASESA, State Essential Services Assessment, or RENZO Modernization. So SOAR is but one of the tools in the toolbox.
Do you think SOAR will be a long-term part of the state's economic development strategies? The funding for it is, I believe, going to expire within the next year or two. And the governor in her State of the State speech really didn't talk about SOAR, its new name, the Make It in Michigan Fund. Instead, talked a lot about newer programs like the Hire Michigan program or starting a research and development tax credit. Do you think there's going to be this shift away from SOAR to these other programs?
So that's an interesting question. I think that is really the domain of the elected officials. Here's what I do know. I think that we in Michigan have to have policy tools that are going to meet the moment and mirror federal industrial policy. One of the reasons why SOAR was enacted is because at the time, there was movement from the Biden-Harris administration to try to bring these supply chains home. So you had companies, domestic and international, that were looking to make investments in semiconductor, clean tech, mobility, all parts of mobility ecosystem, and they knew they could get IRA dollars or CHIPS dollars at federal level, but they were not necessarily, didn't necessarily have to come to Michigan. All they had to do was come to the U.S. So then it required U.S. states to have almost a match or a certain set of incentive dollars to match that. So I think what I'm saying is we will see an evolution of what is formerly known as SOARS, the Closing Fund, or the Make It in Michigan Fund. It will probably morph and change as elected officials adjust to what's happening in the macroeconomic environment, really driven by federal incentives. So I think that it's important to have a holistic, broad set of tools. And I think that Hire Michigan, the R&D tax incentive, the REN zone modernization, as I'm grateful to both legislators in both the House and Senate for moving that, that will help us compete over the long run as well as the intermediate term as we continue to work through what is currently the Biden-Harris federal industrial policy.
I want to dig into a couple of the SOAR projects. Two of the flagship ones were the Goshen Advanced Battery Component Plant near Big Rapids and then the Ford Battery Facility in Marshall. And both of those have hit snags. Ford has paused activity on the Marshall plant, and Goshen is in a, you know, in a battle with local government in court. Where do these projects stand now, and what happens to state funds if neither of them pan out?
So I will address your questions in reverse order. I have absolute confidence that both projects will be successful. For your listeners, every project that comes before that MEDC recommends to the Michigan Strategic Fund goes through a vigorous due diligence process where the merits are raised by a group of board members from the business community who have a wide breadth of experience. And what I can report is, you know, we are in the process. To your point, there was a pause, but that pause has been lifted on the Ford Marshall project. So I think you're now seeing movement. I think that we will soon, in the coming weeks, see the Ford project return to the Michigan Strategic Fund as it is changed, obviously, because of the company's determination of how to properly adjust the investment. But I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised. With regard to the Goshen situation, you know, that is a unique situation, I guess, in the sense that it may be the first time that has happened in Michigan. But I think if you look across the country, I think you see a number of projects, particularly as everybody is now readjusting, recalibrating, that yes, EV adoption is increasing year over year. It's greater than the previous years, but it may not be reaching the level of demand that was originally forecast. So therefore, companies are retweaking. I think the good news for Goshen is they're moving forward. I do think that unfortunately, in this environment, things that once were not politicized, the notion of trying to ensure that you provide entrepreneurial as well as employment opportunities to regions of the state that may not have had the type of economic growth that have been clamoring for this for years, and then somehow that gets turned around by people who may not have a full presentation of the entire fact pattern is unfortunate. But I am absolutely confident that projects are going to be successful. And if they, in the off chance that they're not, each agreement that MEDC presents to the Michigan Strategic Fund has milestone agreements that dollars do not go out until the particular projects reach this milestones. And in the off chance that the milestones are reached and then subsequently moved away, meaning, you know, the project goes beyond base employment levels or other things that could be unremitted breach, then the state has the ability to claw back. None of that is germane or has come to the fruition in either the Ford, Blue Oval Battery Park, Michigan, or the Goshen project. And I don't see them happening in the future.
So both the Ford and especially the Goshen plants have met some fierce resistance locally from some residents. Of course, Not in My Backyard has been an issue for any manner of projects forever. But are you surprised at the amount of criticism those projects have taken locally? And is there a concern about locating these major projects in areas where they appear to be divisive?
Yeah, sure. I you asked maybe 2.5 questions. So let me go. Am I concerned about locating in places that are potentially divisive? I believe in the process of educating my friends and neighbors. You know, as I tell people all the time, I have the responsibility of trying to grow the Michigan economy on behalf of over 10.5 million people who live on two peninsulas and 83 counties. And I think what we found is the vast majority of folks in both communities remain supportive. I do think that there are folks who have expressed their opportunity in a representative democracy to sort of say their piece. I think we continue to educate folks on that. And I think that we're making progress. So I'm not concerned about some long-term inability of Michigan to attract projects or find opportunities and site projects where we know that communities will be hungry and welcoming of them. I think that the onus, I always say, the onus is on me. The buck ultimately comes to me, and I have the ultimate accountability to educate our friends and neighbors across the state as to why these projects are not only important in the immediate term, the intermediate term, but also the long term. And what we're trying to do is establish an entrepreneurial and employment environment that's going to allow people to continue to enjoy what we all recognize, a wonderful place to develop, attract people, a great place that has wonderful diverse set of communities, urban, rural, suburban, semi-rural, and a place where you can realize an incredible diversity of professional opportunities. You can change your career multiple times without ever leaving the state. And I think very few states can offer that. And I think these long-term, large projects in this moment that's resetting supply chains and across some of the industries that I've mentioned previously, whether it be mobility or semiconductor or clean tech or defense and aerospace, is an opportunity for us to make sure that Michigan remains at the forefront. We have to continue to educate. And one of the things I should say is MEDC does not impose projects upon communities. Before, as part of the due diligence process, we seek to make sure that there is community support. Now, you know, in these two particular projects, I think over the course of time, because of the complexity, because of the magnitude of the size, you saw that community support ebb and change, but it has never been less than the majority of the residents. Now, you have some that are more vocal than others, but we are constantly learning. I think it's partly just to help educate folks and demystify and help people understand that this is going to be additive and not destructive to the character of these communities.
I'm curious about your reaction to a movement among some Democrats in the legislature to dedicate a portion of the taxpayer aid the state is awarding to companies instead of to the host community. Can you walk us through that plan, and does MEDC support this concept?
I am not, in the way that you presented, I want to be careful. I'm not fully familiar with the plan as you present it, but I will always say this. My obligation, MEDC's obligation, is to provide unvarnished, market-based intelligence to both the executive branch, led by Governor Whitmer and Lieutenant Governor Gilchrist, as well as the legislative branch, both the House and Senate. And so ultimately, elected officials will deem what they perceive the best way of executing the Make It in Michigan economic development strategy focused on people, places, and projects. It is not my place to opine on whether or not I believe, you know, the efficacy of it. My obligation is to present the facts, present it in such a way that is responsible and basically says to our elected official, here's how we perceive, based upon competitive pressures, not only domestically but internationally, especially from our neighbors to the north in Canada, since we are always very much compared not only to the state to the south or Indiana or some of our Midwestern brothers and sisters, but also to Ontario. So we have to make sure that we have policies and we have a view that allows us to be competitive. And I think the Make It in Michigan strategy allows for there to be support and help companies de-risk their investment, but also the place portion allows for there to be investment in the cultivation and revitalization of communities, and the people part allows us to make sure that we develop the most important asset that Michigan has, which are the people who live here in the state, and making sure that they can realize their hopes, their dreams, and become a state of lifelong learners that could have opportunities independent of where market forces may shape or where new technologies might create industries that maybe today we may not have even imagined.
There was a story in Bridge, Michigan last week that 4 in 10 jobs created by companies receiving state incentives are paying less than the state's median annual base wage of $45,510 a year. Does it make sense for the state to be subsidizing jobs that pay less than $45,000 a year? It's been a real mantra from this administration about supporting good-paying jobs. How would you define a good-paying job?
Well, I think a good-paying job satisfies really three things. One, it has to be above the median regional wage. And so we have to make sure Michigan is divided into 10 prosperity regions, and we need to make sure that every job we incent is above the median regional wage for that particular region. So that's one. Two, the jobs provide a pathway for not only professional growth and development, but also for the men and women, our friends and neighbors, the longer they work there, to be able to have opportunities to see greater wage growth and greater income growth. I think finally, and I think this is through programs, whether it's TriShare or other programs that are done with Leo and other agencies, and increasingly you're gonna see MyLeap expand to the space, make sure that we make it easier for everyone who wants to participate in the labor force to participate. So we really want to incent opportunities for companies who make it easier for there to be childcare. So I think that's the way that I would respond to that. As far as the 4 in 10 number, I think the question is, we always ask the local community, as I stated earlier, is there support? And I think when you start sort of aggregating across a state that's as diverse as ours, talking about the average, rather than looking at and treating the 10 prosperity regions as distinct regions, I think potentially you could run into some situations where you may have communities clamoring for opportunities and with the expectation and with the promise that these opportunities are going to lead to gateway positions that are going to grow over time to exceed not only the regional median, but also the state and obviously national. That's the objective ultimately.
There's been a lot of attention on the non-disclosure agreements state officials have been signing to participate in discussions about economic incentives to attract or retain economic development. How does the state balance the need not to have details of negotiations go public before they are final with the responsibility of elected and taxpayer-funded officials to serve the public? I mean, it seems like those two goals or outputs are kind of competing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting question, but I think that one of the things that we have to make sure that is we have to understand the process, and maybe there is a belief that the process is not public. So the first question that was in there that I'd like to unpack is why non-disclosure agreements, and I think you alluded to it, is that frequently when we're talking to companies, big and small, companies are frequently telling us their plans not only for this particular project, but their plans for the next 5, 10, 15 years. And obviously that in a competitive environment, industries such as semiconductor or clean tech or mobility or defense and aerospace, you could imagine why they could be concerned about that. But there are checks and balances. Before a dollar ever goes to a company, every project that MEDC recommends is recommended to the Michigan Strategic Fund. Public body, subject to the Open Meetings Act, every term sheet, deal memo is very much presented in a public forum that, you know, the public can read, including our elected officials. We talked about SOAR earlier. There's an additional step that for every project that's recommended for SOAR dollars, it goes before the House and Senate Appropriations Committee, where typically, you know, I have been asked about projects, having to present the merits, and this is even a second time, because most times when there is a project that's coming before the MSF board, we provide memos and information to our elected officials. So I don't know whether or not I would fully sign off on a belief that there is a tension. I think it's an issue of timing. I think to say that there's never going to be an opportunity for elected officials to opine and be able to be fiduciaries about the public funding wouldn't be correct. And then also understanding that recently, this legislature agreed to, for the first time, to allow both the majority and minority parties to appoint people to the Michigan Strategic Fund Board. So that is another opportunity for our legislators to have voice into this process.
How is Michigan doing in making itself an attractive place for companies to locate and stay? Do you think these kinds of targeted tax programs are sufficient? Of course, the Republicans would say we need to cut taxes overall.
Well, I would say to your first question, how is Michigan doing? Michigan, until we are unapologetically number one and dominating year over year, there's always work to do. But if you look at objective facts, third party, Michigan was in the top 10 of CNBC's ranking of states to do business for maybe only the second time in that ranking. We were number 10 and one of the leaders in the Midwest. We have been a leader in creating jobs in the mobility sector, the clean tech sector. There's always work to be done, But I think one of the things I have to do better, a better job, is really making sure that people understand that the economic development incentives are but one tool, one aspect of the overall Make It in Michigan economic development strategy. We work with small businesses. When I say we, the MEDC provides funding for the Small Business Development Center. We work very closely with our APEX Accelerator in the defense and aerospace sector. We work with our smart zones. We're hiring a chief innovation ecosystem officer as part of or in conjunction with the governor's recommendation for an innovation fund. We're constantly thinking about, and one of the reasons why we created a talent action team or the talent solutions team here at MEDC is to work more closely with LEO and our Michigan Works agencies across the state to make it easier for companies to have the type of access to training and partnerships with universities to make sure that they have the talent to ensure that they can do well. We also work very closely with the men and women of labor to make sure that the training programs that our unions that represent our brothers and sisters in labor are better understood and can help companies to take advantage of having some of the best trained men and women, whether it's construction, whether it's steel work, whether it's auto work, whether it's, you know, you name it, the various different industries. And so there's more than just the incentives. The incentives take the headlines and maybe take the interest of some, but it's a broad understanding that we want to make more in Michigan. And the objective for how we're doing is, are we capturing more of that ability to make more? We do hard tech better than anyone. That doesn't mean that we're not going to do soft tech, but we know how to make things and make things at scale, and it's becoming more and more complex to make things. And we need to create a policy environment that makes companies that make things want to come here, as well as continue to support our agribusiness and tourism and hospitality sector. So it really is the power of air. It's not just one single thing that we're trying to accomplish at MEDC.
Quinton Messer, CEO of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, or MEDC, thank you so much for joining us here on MishMash.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again to our guest, Quinton Messer from the MEDC. MishMash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with the Gongwer News Service. MishMash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow and Alethea Kasman. Additional production and editing by Hearns Laguerre Jr. Mixing, mastering, and music by Sam Bobian. Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this show and you want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review or comment wherever you listen. You can subscribe or follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, basically wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends about how much you've learned from MishMash and send them a link. Remember, we are produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, really like this podcast, you can support WDET by going to WDET.org/give and become a member of WDET at WDET.org. We'll talk to you next week.